Dear listeners, Sairam, we now bring you Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. Today's episode was first aired on the 10th January 2013 as part of Thursday Live programs on Asia Stream of Radio Sai. This program is hosted by Team Radio Sai's Bishu. Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. In a discourse to the students in September 2006, Baba said, quote, "The mind is a bundle of thoughts. When the thoughts and resolutions are controlled, it becomes clean like a placid lake." When he was young, Narendra tried his best to control his thoughts. When he finally succeeded, he acquired a pure heart, unquote. And this serenity and power of purity came to Narendra once he came to the feet of his master, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. Baba in that discourse added that instead of reading other novels and books, students of the present time should read the life stories of great personalities like Sri Ramakrishna and Swami Vivekananda. And in a couple of days, on January 12th to be precise, the world will be celebrating the 150th birth anniversary of this powerhouse of a pure soul who galvanized the youth of this country like few had ever imagined, let alone ventured to. Inspired the youth like the way he did. He awakened their spirits to live, to strive, to persevere, and if needed, even perish for a higher and nobler purpose than lead a mundane existence of ignorance, dependence, and depression. And how did he do it? What was about him that simply captured and catapulted the energy of the youth of this country to never before seen heights? Is he still relevant after nearly 150 years of his earthly sojourn, when the world has changed so much? Does his message and life still echo in some corners of the world? And why does Baba ask us to study the life of personalities like him, and how should we do it? Well, these are some of the things, dear listeners, we are going to deal with and discuss tonight. And it is going to be a session of interesting slices and revealing anecdotes from his life, from the life of Swami Vivekananda, especially his early days, which I hope will give us plenty of food for thought and energy to our nerves to help us chart a determined course of action for our own lives. Even as we listen to Bhagawan's discourses and hear about Baba's manifestations almost every other day, this should inspire us to become better devotees, better messengers, better beacons of love of our beloved Lord. But before we embark on this journey, first, let us offer our most loving and prayerful salutations at the lotus feet of the one who is the source of all power, the fountainhead of all knowledge, the inexhaustible reservoir of all energy, the infinite treasure chest of all love, our dear Lord Bhagwan Baba. Dear Lord, please bless us so that we too imbibe those salient principles and disciplines in our life to rise up to your expectations of being a channel of your love, a conduit of your presence and your grace. Please bless us with that strength, with that tenacity, and with that wisdom. With this prayer, dear listeners, let's move on. And today, in this yet another session of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside, we discuss the powerhouse of purity and positive energy, Swami Vivekananda, Part 1. Yes, this is going to be the first episode of this program based on the life of Swami Vivekananda, because there is so much to his life, several aspects to his personality that we really need to ruminate upon. So let's do one chapter at a time.
Ah, अपने धाम चल रे मन अपने धाम। इस जग में परदेश है बंदे भटक रहा क्यों सुबह और शाम, भटक रहा क्यों चल रे।
The first meeting of Narendra with his master at Dakshineshwar was indeed momentous. Sri Ramakrishna instantaneously recognized his future messenger. Narendra, on the other hand, careless about his clothes and general appearance, was so unlike the other young men who had accompanied him to this temple. His eyes were, of course, impressive, partly indrawn, indicating a meditative mood. And when someone suggested to Sri Ramakrishna that Narendra can sing well, the master urged him to sing, and this charismatic youngster obliged. He not only obliged, Narendra not only sang, he simply poured his soul into that song. The song begins, as you heard, with coaxing the mind to go. Return to home, O mind, return to your proper home. Why waver and wander aimlessly in this foreign land of earthly existence?
Chal re man apne dham, chal re man apne dham. Is jag mein pardesh hai bande bhatak raha kyun सुबह और शाम, भटक रहा क्यों चल रे मन अपने धाम, चल रे मन अपने धाम, चल रे। साचे प्रेम की जोत जला के मन सुन मेरी कान लगा के, पाप और पुण्य की गठरी उठा रे चल रे मन चल रे मन चल रे चल रे मन अपने धाम, चल रे मन अपने धाम, चल रे मन।
They alone live who live for others. Those who live for themselves are more dead than alive.
आँख जो देखे वो झूठा सपना, सब है पराए कोई ना अपना, सब है पराए कोई ना अपना, चल रे मन मन चल रे मन अपने धाम, चल रे मन अपने धाम। देर न करे अब जाग उठ बंदे, रुकना नहीं तू बढ़ता चल रे, बढ़ता चल रे चल रे मन अपने धाम, चल रे मन अपने धाम, चल रे मन।
When Narendra finished singing, Sri Ramakrishna suddenly grasped Narendra's hand and took him into the northern porch of the temple. To Narendra's utter amazement, with tears streaming down his cheeks, the master said, "Ah, you have come so late. How unkind of you to keep me waiting for so long. My ears are almost seared listening to the cheap talk of worldly people. Oh, how I have been yearning to unburden my mind to one who will understand my thought." And then, with folded hands, Sri Ramakrishna said, "Lord, I know you are the ancient sage Nara, the incarnation of Narayana, born on earth to remove the miseries of mankind." And when Narendra heard this, he was completely befuddled. To his rational mind, the words of Sri Ramakrishna, whom at that time he used to refer as simply the old man, because the old man is what he was introduced to. The old man's words to him at that time seemed the meaningless jargon of an insane person. He was completely befuddled. And Ramakrishna did not stop at that. He went inside and returned with a box of sweets and started feeding Narendra with his own hands. And even as he did this, the master fed Narendra with his own hands and at the same time extracted a promise from Narendra that he would visit Dakshineshwar again. And then both of them returned to the temple room, and now Naren asked the master a pertinent question, something which he has been searching for weeks and months. He asked, "Sir, have you seen God?" And without a moment's hesitation, Sri Ramakrishna replied, "Yes, I have seen God. In fact, I have seen him as I see you here, indeed only more clearly. Yes, God can be seen. One can talk to him." And then he continued, "But who cares for God? People shed torrents of tears for their wives, for their children, for their wealth and property. But who weeps for the vision of God? If one cries sincerely for God, one can surely see him." When Narendra heard these words from the lips of Sri Ramakrishna, he was simply astounded. For the first time in his life, he was face to face with a man who asserted that he had indeed seen God. For the first time, in fact, he was hearing that God could be seen. And he could feel that Ramakrishna's words were uttered from the depths of an inner experience. They could not be doubted. Still, Narendra could not reconcile these words with Ramakrishna's strange conduct. What puzzled Narendra further was Ramakrishna's normal behavior in the presence of others. So the young man, Narendra, returned to Calcutta bewildered, but with a feeling of inner peace, a peace that he had never experienced before. And it is for this sense of inner peace that Narendra returned to the master time and again after this. For 5 years, he closely watched the master, never allowing himself to be influenced by blind faith, always testing the words and actions of Sri Ramakrishna in the crucible of reason. It cost him many sorrows and much anguish before he accepted Sri Ramakrishna as the guru and the ideal of the spiritual life that he wanted to lead. But when the acceptance came, finally, it was wholehearted, it was final, it was irrevocable. And the master too had found the one who will carry his message to the world. On one occasion, when Narendra did not visit the master for a good period of time, unable to bear his absence, Sri Ramakrishna himself went to Calcutta and visited the house of the disciple where Narendra was supposed to be studying at that point in time. And the moment the master saw Narendra, he exclaimed in ecstasy, "Naren, my beloved." He simply went into sort of a trance. The relationship that existed between them was absolutely not of this world. That love was was unique. Naren once said, "What do worldly men know about love? They only make a show of it. The Master alone loves us genuinely. The Master alone loves us genuinely." And how true is this? How many times has life taught us that if there is anyone who loves us truly, sincerely, selflessly, to its very core, it is only God. It is the experience of every Sai devotee. The only person who never leaves our hand, even if we forget sometimes to hold on to him, caught in our rigmarole of daily life and self-created anxieties. The only person who's ever watchful, who's ever caring, ever guarding, is God, is Sai. And that is exactly what Narendra experienced then. Even though he still could not reconcile with everything that the Master did, especially his ways of worship, to the idol of Mother Kali, he was confused about the way the Master went about with his rituals and worship and adoration of Mother Kali. But the Master's love for him just blew him over. His love simply overwhelmed him to every cell of his being. And this is an experience of every student of Bhagwan's institutions, every student who has had the opportunity of being at the lotus feet of Baba and basking in his divine proximity will exactly know what this experience is all about. When pure selfless love touches you, you never ever remain the same again. One day when Narendra begged the Master to teach him meditation, Sri Ramakrishna's reply to him was a source of comfort and strength. The Master said, "God listens to your sincere prayer. I can swear that you can see God and talk with him as intensely as you see me and talk with me. You can hear his words and feel his touch. You may not believe in divine forms." He knew what was going on in the mind of Vivekananda at that time, Narendra. He said, "You may not believe in divine forms, but if you believe in an ultimate reality who is the regulator of the universe, you can pray to him." And how to pray to him? Pray to him thus: "O God, I do not know thee. Be gracious to reveal to me thy real nature." And the Master continued, "He will certainly listen to you if your prayer is sincere." So this is how the spiritual training went on, and this training went on for 5 to 6 years. Narendra's keen mind understood the subtle implications of Sri Ramakrishna's teachings. One day the Master said that there are 3 salient disciplines of Vaishnavism, that is, the group of followers who believe in the path of devotion to Vishnu or Lord Krishna. And the Master went on to narrate these 3 salient aspects of Vaishnavism. First, love of God's name. Second, service to devotees. Third, compassion for all living beings. But strangely, the Master did not like the word compassion. Love for God is fine, service to devotees is fine, but compassion for all living beings, it sounds perfect. But for the Master, it was absurd. He said, "How foolish it is to speak of compassion. Man is an insignificant worm crawling on the earth. Who is he to show compassion to others? That is not correct. It should not be compassion. It should just be service. Service to all. Service to all, recognizing them as God's manifestations. That is the space of absolute egolessness from which the Master chiseled the heart of Swami Vivekananda." And when some devotees sought more clarification on what the Master had said, Naren explained, "Love in the true sense of the word is not possible unless one sees God in others." The Master's words, he said, reconcile the paths of knowledge and action. The one who follows the path of knowledge, or the one who is a follower of Advaita or non-dualism, did not have to make his heart dry as sand or have to run away to the forest from the away from the world. instead of. Ruminating on the non-dual aspect, what he has to do is to know and realize that God existed, Brahman, pervaded in all men, and he should live in society and serve all and love all. And the ones who are in the path of action and devotion should just put into practice this discipline of love. In fact, Narendra became so enamored and electrified with this message of Sri Ramakrishna that he declared, "If it be the will of God, I shall one day proclaim this noble truth before the world at large. I shall make it a common property of all, the wise and the fool, the rich and the poor, the Brahmin and the Farah." He wanted this message of Ramakrishna to penetrate into every soul, and that is in fact what he did. These powerful thoughts inspired the minds of young Indians then, when India was still under the foreign rule, and it galvanized their energies and inspired their beings like never before. Some time ago, the Sai youth from West Bengal presented in front of Bhagwan a beautiful drama highlighting the salient aspects of the life of Swami Vivekananda, and one scene where he instructs his disciples is really powerful.
"Thou brave one, be bold, take courage, be proud that thou art an Indian, and proudly proclaim, 'I am an Indian, every Indian is my brother.' Say, 'The ignorant Indian, the poor and destitute Indian, the Brahmin Indian, the Pariha Indian is my brother.' Say, 'Brother, the soil of India is my highest heaven, the good of India is my good.' And repeat and pray day and night, 'O thou Lord of Gauri, O thou Mother of the universe, vouchsafe manliness unto me. O thou Mother of strength, take away my weaknesses, take away my unmanliness, and make me a man.'"
In 1886, as the master's health was failing, Narendra realized that his beloved teacher would not live long. So he wanted to intensify his spiritual practices. At this time, his longing for the vision of God knew no limits. So one day, he asked the master, "Thakur, give me the boon of remaining merged in samadhi for 3 or 4 days at a stretch. Nothing should interrupt my meditation except for a bite of food now and then. Give me this boon so that I remain in constant state of samadhi." And the moment the master heard this prayer, he immediately shot back, "You are a fool, Narendra." Narendra was completely taken aback. And then the master explained, "There is a state even higher than this. It is you who sings, 'O Lord, thou art all that exists.' It is you who sing, 'O Lord, thou art all that exists.'" The master wanted him to contemplate on the truth of that statement, that God is all pervading. Instead of seeking the vision of God, he was urging him to see God in all beings and to serve them in a spirit of reverence and worship. In fact, this reminds me of a personal experience narrated by Brother Satyajit, who served Swami at very close quarters for nearly 14 years. This happened many years ago, in June 1996 to be precise. It was just the second opportunity that Brother Satyajit had of sitting inside Bhagwan's car along with him. He was in the back seat of the car to Swami's right, and Swami was going on a drive towards the Beltur side of Vrindavan, Baba's ashram in Bangalore. He was going not towards the railway line, but the opposite direction. And there were many apartment buildings and green fields passing by, and suddenly Swami said to Satyajit, "Kya dekh sakta hai?" In his typical style of speaking Hindi. So Satyajit thought that probably Swami was asking, "What do you see?" So he said, "Swami ko dekhta hai. Swami, I am seeing you." "That is different, sir," Swami said. "That is different. Tell me, what do you want to see? Kya dekh sakta hai?" That is how Swami asked. "Tell me, what do you want to see? Rama dekh sakta hai? Krishna dekh sakta hai? Do you want to see Rama? Do you want to see Krishna? Bolo. Kya dekh sakta hai?" Now Satyajit started thinking, oh my God, he is going to grant me this boon of having the vision of Rama or Krishna. Whatever I want to see. And his mind was now all over the place. He was thinking of how Swami gave the vision of Krishna to Dr. Hislop. We know how Swami gave the darshan of Rama to the Raja of Venkatagiri. And he now was totally befuddled. This was a great opportunity, yes. But what to tell Swami? What reply to give to him? What to ask him? He thought for a while. And then he reconciled to the thought. I am seeing Swami. Why do I need to see anybody else? So he simply said, Kuch nahi Swami. Swami ko dekhta hai. I want nothing, Swami. I am seeing you. That is enough. But Swami just brushed it aside. He said, Chalu rani vedantamu. Saying, enough of your philosophy and devotion. Tell me, I am asking you, what do you want to see? Narsimha dekhna sakta hai? Dekh sakta hai? Do you want to see Narsimha avatar? And Satyajit immediately shot back, no Swami, I don't want to see that fiery form of the Lord. Bolo, kya dekhta hai? Shirdi Baba dekhta hai? Old man dekhta hai? Old man is how Swami referred to Shirdi Sai. He was asking, Swami is telling, itna poochta hoon, kya dekh sakta hai? What do you want to see? Do you want to see Shirdi Sai? I'm asking you so many times. Tell me, what do you want to see? And now, since Swami was insisting, Satyajit thought, let me take the chance and ask something which is non-controversial. In the sense that, if I ask for any form of God when Swami is present right beside, it would be highly inappropriate. So he thought for a while and cleverly asked, Swami, Vishwarupa dekh sakta hai Swami? Swami, I want to have your Vishwarupa darshan. The mind-boggling vision of the Lord as seen by Arjuna before the start of the Mahabharata war, the cosmic form from which all forms of gods emerged and into which all beings finally dissolve. The cosmic personality of the universal being. So he thought this would be something absolutely unique and at the same time risk-free. So at the same time, this would be something that no one possibly has been blessed with. And the moment he said, Swami, Vishwarupa, dekh sakta hai, Swami just leaned back on the seat, stretched his hand outside the window and said, he showed him to the window and he said, Roj dekhta hai, samajhta nahi. Roj dekhta hai, understand nahi karta. You see it every day. You don't understand. You don't fathom this. And this set Satyajit thinking for the next 15 minutes as he looked outside the window. He tried to understand. He tried to assimilate what Baba was trying to communicate to him. What is it that the Lord showed to Arjuna then? Was it a vision of a gigantic form or was it just a change in his drishti? How he perceived the world? Did Krishna teach Arjuna how to see the world differently? Suddenly Arjuna could see God in everything. God as an all-pervading being. There was nothing as past, present or future. There was neither birth nor death nor fire nor forest. Everything was subsumed in that divine cosmic form. In fact, Swami Vivekananda too had such vision of the world. Not once but a couple of times. When the master put him through the crucible to chisel his mind and open his heart. But we will talk about that in later episodes of this program. So continuing the story, Satyajit was ruminating on what Baba said. And that day, the story doesn't end there. Swami returned to Vrindavan, to Trey Vrindavan, his residence in Bangalore. And Swami was walking to the dining room and Satyajit was following him. And on the pathway was standing Mrs. Ratanlal, who used to look after Swami's meals. Looking at her and pointing to Satyajit who was following behind, Swami told Mrs. Ratanlal, Dekho, dekho, Dunnapata, look at this boy. And Mrs. Ratanlal's expression was like, now what did this boy do, Swami? And Swami said, Dekho, Swami seva ka avkash mila hai, moksh ke bare mein poochta hai. Look at this boy, he has got the chance to serve Swami and is asking for moksha, for liberation. almost adding, how foolish is this? And that really shook Satyajit, and the kind of change of perspective it brought in his thinking is unprecedented. In no unclear terms, the Lord was communicating what should be the goal of one's life. Is it individual salvation? Is it simply sitting quietly and doing meditation just for one's peace, shut off from everything that is happening to people around us? On another occasion, when Narendra made again a similar request for liberation, Sri Ramakrishna told him sternly, "Shame on you, Naren. You are asking for such an insignificant thing. I thought you would be like a banyan tree, a big banyan tree, that thousands of people would rest in your shade. But now I see that you are seeking your own liberation. How sad is this?" That day, Narendra shed profuse tears and at the same time realized the greatness of his master, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa's heart. The message of the master was crystal clear to him. In fact, this reminds me of a powerful discourse that Swami gave to the students way back in 1996.
కనుకనే మనము సమాజంలో పుట్టినందుకు సమాజానికి సేవ చేయాలి.
Having been born in society, we should serve society.
సమాజం బాగుంటేనే మనం బాగుంటాము.
If society is good, you'll be good.
లేకపోతే నీవెట్లా బాగుంటావు?
Or else, how do you expect to be good?
కనుకనే సమాజ సేవలో ప్రతి ఒక్కరు కూడా నువ్వు పాల్గొనాలి.
So everyone should participate in social.
సమాజం యొక్క సంక్షేమాన్ని అంతా మనం ఆశించాలి.
One should desire for the welfare of the society.
అప్పుడే మన క్షేమమైన కూడా మనకు ప్రాప్తిస్తుంది.
And your welfare depends on the welfare of the society.
ప్రేమ స్వరూపులారా,
embodiments of love.
ఈ సమాజ సేవకు మనకు కావలసినటువంటి ప్రేమ ఒక్కటే.
For the social service, love is essential.
ఈ ప్రేమకు మించినటువంటి మరొకటి లేదు.
There is no other thing beyond love.
ఈ ప్రేమనే సర్వమును మనకు సమకూరుస్తుంది.
Through love you can get everything.
That was Bhagwan's discourse in July 1996. Dear listeners who have joined us recently, you are listening to the Thursday live broadcast straight from the studios of Radio Sai to this episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. And today we discuss the powerhouse of purity and positive energy, Swami Vivekananda. January 12th, 2013 is the 150th birth anniversary of this powerful personality. And we discuss about his life and message in the light of Bhagavan's teachings. After the master, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa's passing in 1886, Narendra, now as Swami Vivekananda, tore the length and breadth of the country from the north to the south, and at the southern point of India at Cape Comorin, the Swami became as excited as a child. He rushed to the temple there to worship the Divine Mother. He prostrated himself before the Virgin Goddess Kanyakumari, and as he came out and looked at the sea, his eyes fell on a rock. Swimming to that rock through shark-infested waters, he sat on that stone, and this rock even today is known as the Vivekananda Rock. His heart was thumping with emotion. His great journey from the snow-capped Himalayas to the land's end at Kanyakumari was complete. He had traveled the whole length of the Indian subcontinent, his beloved, beloved motherland. And sitting on the stone now, he recalled what he had seen with his own eyes. The pitiable condition of the Indian masses, victims of the unscrupulous whims of their rulers, landlords and priests, the tyranny of caste which had sapped the last drop of blood from so many of his brethren. In most of the so-called leaders who shouted from the housetops for liberation of people, he had seen how they were selfishness personified. And now he asked himself what his duty was in this situation. Should he regard the whole world as a dream, as Maya, and go into solitude to commune with God? Remain in meditation? Find his peace? In fact, he had tried that several times, but that never gave him fulfillment. He remembered that as a sannyasin, as a renunciant, he had taken the vow to dedicate himself to the service of God. But this God, now he was convinced, was revealed through humanity. And his own service to this God must begin, therefore, with the humanity of India. And it is at this time, in a moment of inspiration and realization, he exclaimed, "May I be born again and again and suffer a thousand miseries, if only I may worship the God in whom I believe, the sum total of all souls and above all, my God, the wicked. My God, the afflicted. My God, the poor of all races. May I be born again and again and suffer 1,000 miseries so that I serve my God the wicked, my God the afflicted, my God the poor of all races. Through austerity and self-control, the Swami had conserved great spiritual power. His mind had been filled with the wisdom of the East and the West. He had received in abundance Sri Ramakrishna's blessings. He also had many spiritual experiences of his own. And he now concluded he must use all of these assets only for the service of God in man. And how many times has Baba drilled into us, into our hearts and minds, this very same message? Every talent is a blessing from God. It is a prasadam from God. And it has to be offered back to God as naivedyam. What we receive from God, everything that we have is His prasadam. And it has to be offered back to Him as naivedyam. You must listen to a discourse of Bhagwan when he mentioned about what our duty to society should be.
కనుక సమాజంలో ప్రవేశించి జరుగుతున్నటువంటి దోషములను, జరుగుతున్నటువంటి అన్యాయములను, అక్రమములను, అనాచారములను సాధ్యమైనంత వరకు మనం ఎదుర్కొని దాన్ని సరిచేయడానికి తగినటువంటి కృషి చేయాలి.
Therefore, we have to enter into the society and oppose all the defects, all the mistakes, all the sins and all the unrighteous conduct and set them right. This is the effort which will have
to be done. ఉండినటువంటి వాడే సమాజ సేవకు సరైనటువంటి అధికారి.
ఓన్లీ దట్ పర్సన్ హూ హ్యావ్ దిస్ క్వాలిఫికేషన్ కెన్ సర్వ్ ది సొసైటీ ప్రాపర్.
ఈ అధికారం మనం సంపాదించాలి.
దేర్ ఫోర్ యూ నాట్ అక్వైర్ దిస్ పర్టికులర్
ఎట్టి ప్రమాదములు వచ్చినప్పటికీ మనం భయపడనక్కర్లేదు.
వాట్ ఎవర్ డిఫికల్టీస్ అండ్
ఎట్టి నిందలు మనం పొందినప్పటికీ మనం వెరవనక్కర్లేదు.
యూ నీడ్ నాట్ బి అఫ్రైడ్ ఆఫ్ ఎనీథింగ్ అట్ ఆల్.
నిందలు నిష్ఠూరములు జగత్తుకు మాత్రమే.
ద క్రిటిసిజం ఈజ్ ఓన్లీ టు ద వరల్డ్.
మీకు కాదు.
దే డు నాట్ touch you at all.
నీవు నిత్యుడు సత్యుడు.
యు ఆర్ ఏ పర్మనెంట్ ఎంటిటీ అండ్ ఏ ట్రూ ఎంటిటీ.
అలాంటి వాడు నిందలు నిష్ఠూరములకు భయపడనక్కర్లేదు.
సచ్ ఎ పర్సన్ నీడ్ నాట్ బి అఫ్రైడ్ ఆఫ్ క్రిటిసిజం.
దైవం విశ్వాసాన్ని దృఢముగా చేసుకుని
డెవలప్ ఫర్మ్ ఫెయిత్ ఇన్ గాడ్.
ఆ విశ్వాసాన్ని మనం ఆచరణలో ఉంచి
ప్రాక్టీస్ దట్ పర్టికులర్ ఫెయిత్.
ఆనందాన్ని అనుభవించినప్పుడు
వెన్ యూ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ది డిలైట్ కమింగ్
ఏనుగులంత బలం కూడా నీకు లభిస్తుంది.
You get the strength of 1,000.
Dairyam sarvasadakam.
Through God you can achieve anything. Yesterday Swami said,
Mana Sila Trayamunuvani.
The trinity of Silas.
Mana Parishuddham Anaga Pavitramu.
Purity.
Sahanamu.
Patience.
Oka Dairyamu.
Perseverance.
Ee yokka deenini manu sadhinchinappudu. ఎన్నింటినైనా మనం సాధించవచ్చు.
యూ కెన్ అచీవ్ దీస్ త్రీ. యూ కెన్
ఎనీథింగ్. పవిత్రము లేనటువంటి వానికి ఈ విధమైనటువంటి సహనం లేకుండా పోతుంది.
ఏ పర్సన్ హూ డస్ నాట్ హ్యావ్ ప్యూరిటీ అలోన్ విల్ నాట్ హ్యావ్ పేషెన్స్.
సహనము లేనటువంటి వానికి ధైర్యము చాలదు.
ఏ పర్సన్ వితౌట్ పేషెన్స్ కెనాట్ హ్యావ్ పర్సివరెన్స్ అండ్ కరేజ్.
ఈ ధైర్యము లేనప్పుడు వాడు మహాబలహీనుడైపోతాడు.
ఇఫ్ వన్ డజంట్ హ్యావ్ పర్సివరెన్స్ అండ్ కరేజ్ హీ బికమ్స్ ఎన్ ఎక్స్ట్రీమ్ వీక్లీ.
తాను చెడటమే కాకుండా పరిసర ప్రాంతంలో కూడా నువ్వు చెడగొడతాడు.
నాట్ ఓన్లీ విల్ హీ బి స్పాయిల్డ్, హీ విల్ పొల్యూట్ ది ఎంటైర్ ఎన్వైరన్మెంట్.
ఇలాంటి జీవితము మానవ జీవితమే కాదు.
దట్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ లైఫ్ కెనాట్ బి కాల్డ్ ఏ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్స్ లైఫ్ అట్ ఆల్.
కనుక మనము బాగుపడి
పది
మందిని బాగు చేయడానికి తగినటువంటి కృషి చేయాలి.
వీ హావ్ టు సేవ్ అవర్ సెల్ఫ్ అండ్ బీ గుడ్ అండ్ మేక్ మెనీ అదర్ పీపుల్ గుడ్.
మనం ఈ విధమైనటువంటి మార్గంలో ఏకత్వమైనటువంటి దైవత్వాన్ని మనం సృష్టించి
వీ హావ్ టు ఫాలో దిస్ పాత్ and have firm faith in the unity of
sarvamunu kolpoyina kuda paravaledu daivanni matram kolporadu.
We will lose everything else but we will never lose God.
అలాంటి నిత్యమైనటువంటి సత్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క దీనిపైన విశ్వాసం అభివృద్ధి చేసుకోవాలని నేను ఆశిస్తూ ఆశీర్వదిస్తూ నా ప్రసంగాన్ని విరమిస్తున్నాను.
We have to develop such a strong and firm faith in that idea, and thus Swami is bringing his divine discourse to a close.
Purity, patience and perseverance, those were the tenets that emerged from the lips of Swami Vivekananda too. It was the same Swami giving us the message the same message 150 years ago through this magnificent instrument. Arise, awake. Arise, wake up yourself and awaken others and stop not till the goal is reached. Strength is life, weakness is death. A handful of men can throw the world off its hinges provided they are united in thought, word and deed. Never forget this conviction. Swami Vivekananda wrote, and this message in fact reverberated not only throughout India but also in the West. It awakened the minds of millions of Indians to their glorious cultural heritage. It infused in them self-confidence and positive outlook and drew their attention to the immediate need to uplift the downtrodden masses of India. He was perhaps the first spiritual leader in modern India to speak for the poor masses and to take up different forms of selfless service to them. And though in the West he spoke of philosophy and Vedanta, in India he only talked about service, of helping one's brothers and sisters who are underprivileged. And this in fact at times puzzled other monks and other disciples. They thought this is not what is the mission propagated by their master. They had many questions. And what were their questions? Let me at this point play for you another clip from the drama by the West Bengal youth in front of Bhagwan in the year 2010.
How is it, Swamiji, that you do not lecture in this country? You have stirred Europe and America with your lectures, but coming back here, you have kept silence.
What good will lectures do in a country like India, where men are emaciated through starvation and weak in mind?
Until you pacify this,
until you remove this evil of hunger and starvation, this constant anxiety for bare existence, lectures and such things will be of no benefit.
How then would India rise? What should we do then to remove that evil?
First, some young men full of spirit of renunciation are needed. Those who will be ready to sacrifice their lives for others instead of devoting themselves to their own happiness. And these will be enough to shake the world.
But Swamiji, what should be done then?
Work. Work incessantly to relieve the miseries of the poor and the downtrodden. Go from village to village and make people understand that mere sitting idly won't do anymore. Make them understand their real condition. Go. And advise them how to improve their own condition and help them in this. If you cannot do this, then fie upon your education and culture. And fie upon your studying the Vedas and the Vedanta.
But where is that strength in us, Swamiji?
How foolish. Put yourself to work and you will find such tremendous power coming to you. Iron nerves with an intelligent brain and the whole world is at your feet. I love you all ever so much, but I wish you all to die working for others. I should rather be glad to see you do that.
But then what will happen to those who depend on me?
If you are ready to sacrifice your life for others, God will certainly provide some means for them. Never does a doer of good, oh my beloved, come to grief.
But Swamiji, to work for others requires a good deal of money. And where shall we get that?
What do you talk? If you can make your thoughts and words perfectly at one, if you can make yourself one in speech and action, money will pour at your feet of itself like water. To start with, why not do as much as lies within your power? Even if you cannot give to others for want of money, surely you can at least breathe into their ears some good words or impart some good instruction. Can't you? Or does that also require money?
But Swamiji, can we attain salvation this way?
What will you do with individual salvation? This is sheer selfishness. Throw aside your meditation. Throw away your salvation and such things. I will go into 1,000 hells cheerfully if I can rouse my countrymen immersed in tamas to stand on their own feet and be men inspired with the spirit of karma yoga. Put your whole heart and soul in the work to which I have consecrated myself. Go. Go all of you wherever the people are in distress and mitigate their sufferings. On you lie the future hopes of our country. I feel extreme pain to see you leading the life of inaction. Set yourself to work. To work! Do not tarry. The time of death is approaching day by day. Do not sit idle, thinking that everything will be done in time later on. Mind, nothing will be done that way.
The only qualification that the Swamiji looked for in youngsters was to cultivate and nurture the ability to feel. Feel for others. In fact, even as a child, Narendra bore a striking resemblance to his grandfather, who had renounced the world to lead a monastic life, and in fact many thought that the grandfather had been in fact reborn in him. He developed a special fancy for wandering monks even as a child, and the very sight of a monk would excite him. One day when such a monk appeared at the door and asked for alms, Narendra gave him off his only possession, the tiny piece of new cloth that was wrapped round his waist. And thereafter, whenever a monk was seen in the neighborhood, the family members ensured that Narendra is locked inside his room. But even then, he would throw out of the window whatever he found near at hand as an offering to that holy man. That was the spirit of service he was born with. All through this period of boyish play, Narendra retained his admiration for the life of the wandering monk. Pointing to a certain line on the palm of his hand, he would often say to his friends, "I shall certainly become a sannyasi, a renunciant. A palmist has predicted it." And as Narendra grew into adolescence, his temperament showed a marked change. He became keen about intellectual matters, read serious books on history and literature, devoured newspapers and attended public meetings. Music, of course, was his favorite pastime, but he insisted that it should express a lofty idea and arouse divine feelings of the musician and the ones who were listening to it. The passion for purity was established right in his boyhood days, whenever his warm and youthful nature tempted him to walk into a questionable adventure. He was always held back by an unseen hand. His mother had taught him the value of chastity and made him observe it as a matter of honor in loyalty to herself and the family tradition. But purity to Narendra was not a negative virtue. It was not a mere abstention from carnal pleasures. To be pure, he felt, was to conserve an intense spiritual force that would later manifest itself in all the noble aspirations of life. He regarded himself as a brahmacharin, a celibate student of the Hindu tradition who worked hard, prized ascetic disciplines. He held holy things in reverence and enjoyed clean words, thoughts and acts. For according to a Hindu scripture, a man by means of purity, which is the greatest of all virtues, can experience the subtlest spiritual perceptions. And in fact, in Naren, that is probably what accounted for his great power of concentration, memory and insight, and also his indomitable mental energy and physical stamina. In his youth, it is said, Narendra used to see every night two visions, utterly dissimilar in nature, before he fell asleep. One was that of a worldly man with an accomplished wife and children, enjoying wealth, luxuries, fame and social position. And the other of a monk, a sannyasin, bereft of earthly security but devoted to the contemplation of God. And Narendra felt that he had the power to realize both of these ideals. But when his mind reflected on their respective virtues, he was inevitably drawn to the life of the renunciant. The glamour of the world would fade and disappear. His deeper self instinctively chose the austere path, the path of fulfillment, the path of permanent peace, a path which would lighten, brighten and enlighten not only his life, but the lives of thousands. In fact, there is a revealing incident from his life recorded in his biography. Swamiji, though generally a very jolly personality, one morning had become very serious. The whole day he had not been eating anything, nor did he talk with anybody. And then the disciples heard. They came to know later that in Calcutta, 3/4 of the population had left the city owing to the plague epidemic. And that is when they realized why the Swamiji had become so serious. Swamiji wanted to start relief operations immediately to help the afflicted, and when a brother monk asked him, "But Swamiji, where will we find the funds?" With a sudden fierceness of decision, Swami Vivekananda replied, "Why? We shall sell the newly built mutt if necessary. We are sannyasis, we are renunciants. We must be ready to sleep under the trees and live on daily bhiksha, daily alms as we did before. Why should we care for mutt and possessions when by disposing of them we could relieve thousands suffering before our own eyes?" That is what he said. That was his burning passion to serve, and that is how he ignited this spirit of service in thousands. That is how the divine inspiration worked through him. And this divine inspiration works even today. It continues even to this day. I know of a student of Swami's university who, after completing his master's in physics and master's in business administration, today has only 2 pairs of dress as his possession and 0 balance in his bank account. He serves night and day for the upliftment of the poor, not thinking for a moment where his next meal is going to come from. Swami Vivekananda said, "A pure will is omnipotent." And today, we see any number of such examples where students and Sai devotees have just ventured out with a noble intention, a pure desire, and leaving the rest to God, and the divine does the rest. Let us always remember that if there is any purpose to our lives, if there is any goal, true goal to our lives, it is to lead a life of purpose, to dedicate ourselves to a lofty idea. And what can be grander than samasta loka sukhino bhavantu? Let all beings everywhere be happy. Let us strive to bring that one extra smile in someone else's face, that one extra love in someone else's life.
अजल का जश्न मनाने का जब वक्त आता है,
रहमे खुदाई की कोई हमदम जो मिल जाता है,
रहमे खुदाई की कोई हमदम जो मिल जाता है, हमदम भी गैर बन जाते हैं ये जाने को, दूसरों के गम की बातें मानने को। अल्लाह या अली अली, मौला हो या अली अली, धन्य है वो लोग, धन्य है वो लोग जो औरों के गम को लेते हैं, खुद की कुर्बानी दे औरों को जीवन देते हैं। अल्लाह या अली अली, मौला हो या अली अली। अविनाश निर्मल दिल है पर, अविनाश निर्मल दिल है पर, विनाश तू उस मन को कई, तो गैरों में भी खुदाए हमदम को देखेगा। अल्लाह या अली अली, मौला या
This was from a drama that the students of Bhagwan had performed in front of him on the occasion of convocation in the year 2004. In fact, the earlier song, Chal Re Man, which I played earlier in this program, was also from the same drama. And the earlier song you heard was another song from the same drama, and there was that one line, Vaishnava Janato, Tene Kahiye, Jo Peer Parai Jane Re. Only he can be called a man of God who feels for the pain of his fellow man. This is the way we can call ourselves the devotee of the Lord. Let alone being a devotee or a man of God, Baba says to call ourselves a human with a heart, with hridaya, we need to have daya or love or empathy in our hearts. And that was the message of Baba through Swami Vivekananda more than a century ago, and that is the message of Baba even now. Are we truly Baba's devotees? This is something for us to constantly think about. With this, dear listeners, as the clock marches on, the time in the studios now is 9:45. It's time to wind up this episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. And as I said in the beginning, this is the first part of our discussion on the life of Swami Vivekananda, the powerhouse of purity and positive energy. The way the divine has sculpted his life is so beautiful. There is plenty for us to learn from his fragrant and radiant personality, and we will continue to do so in future episodes of this segment on Thursday nights on Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sahas Bishu. Do tell us what you feel about this program. As always, you can send your emails to listener@radiosai.org, listener@radiosai.org. And finally, from all of us in the studios of Radio Sai, a loving Sai Ram from Prashant Nilayam.
You were listening to an episode of our program Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. This episode was first aired on the 10th January 2013 as part of Thursday Live from Prashantinilam on Asia Stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. This program was hosted by Team Radio Sai's Bishu. Thank you and Sai Ram.